Life is interesting.
No, you didn't miss it much.
So that's a public hearing.
It won't be.
And I think your husband did speak last too.
Some.
You know, I think we're having the same routine.
Sure, still is over there, definitely. She's kind of kicking a little bit, just in case.
That's a dead horse.
Maybe we'll be needing, because I believe he does it.
Oh, okay, well.
You believe what?
I believe by something, something that. If you need them, I would have done two last year, two weeks, three nights out here.
Oh, you're on. Oh, I'm on.
You're on.
Oh, what did I know? I wasn't coming.
You want to wait, you know what you do?
One minute, we'll give him the 5 after, so we'll give him 1 minute. Oh, good, that's good.
Then you can prepare your speech.
Then I'll get my prepared speech. Fine, okay, we'll give him 1 minute. Is that okay?
Yes.
It's up to you.
Okay, no, no, it's up to you, you already both been. Yes. Yes, so I don't, so, and then I don't know.
No, that's all great, so he never asked for it during the budget process.
He wasn't in the mix, really.
I remember when Zaletti was saying that she had a chair, and we had the Clinton's president, we had the top spine, that you go out and fire a car. I said, what kind of this place, you don't need any. He said, we've got more in this county than any, you know, per capita, any other county in the state. So unless something addressed.
Know any stories, get them off the desk, get them out of the field.
I think I'll go ahead and get the meeting started. Cindy, did you, was Dr. Foster coming today?
As far as I knew, I didn't, she does send some, because maybe got caught in traffic or whatever.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
Thanks, Linda, I appreciate that.
So we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. So did everyone get a chance to look at the minutes of our last meeting from October 14th? Any discussion? Do I have a move to accept them?
Second.
All right. Public comments? Oh, I do, oh, thank you. So can I have a vote on every, to approve the minutes of the meeting? Thank you.
Aye.
Aye, okay, good. So any public comments? No? Chairman's comments, we'll defer that if Dr. Foster comes in. So presentations, our WIC program. Pam?
Hi, so my name is Pam Halbach, and I'm the WIC director, and I'm just gonna give you an update on WIC for the past year. Each year, I submit to Gwen and Stacy our WIC goals, and today I'm just gonna highlight three of them. The first one is eWIC. Hopefully you've heard a little bit about eWIC, but I'll provide a little bit more information. And then also our father involvement project and our community-wide food security efforts. So our big project this year has been switching 4,000 clients from paper to plastic. The new way that clients will use it is electronic benefits, and that is from these paper checks. I don't know if you ever saw this when you were shopping in the store, and now clients are getting this like a debit card. So as of September 16th, that's when we started converting all the families over. So it's about a 3-month process because some clients get more than a month at a time. So some people will be using their paper checks up until December. But as of December 15th, everybody in Kenosha County will have been transferred over to the eWIC card. All the Kenosha vendors are now eWIC ready too. They were trained in August with the goal of having about a month to train all of their cashiers. And currently we have 38 WIC vendors in Kenosha County that accept WIC. The farmer market checks are still paper checks, and for the foreseeable future, they'll continue to be paper checks. And those are the checks that clients use at the local farmer markets to get locally grown fresh fruits and vegetables each season. So the benefits of eWIC, they no longer need their ID. They had a WIC signature card, and if they were to forget that or lose it, they weren't able to use their checks. They can buy only what's needed on one trip. In the past, they had to get everything that was on the check or lose it too. So sometimes they would say like 3 gallons or 4 gallons of milk, and if they only wanted to get 2 gallons, they could get 2 gallons, but they'd lose the other two, then would be able to go back and redeem it. Now they can use whatever on their benefits within a 30-day period. Much more privacy at the checkout too. Our goal is that they should be able to shop and nobody would even know that they're using eWIC. We'll be faster for the cashiers, faster for them, faster for all the customers behind them as well. And there again, it's one transaction only. So what we'll encourage all of our clients to do is swipe their eWIC card first because it's the most specific, and then they can pay whatever remaining things they have purchased with cash, debit, Quest card. They still have a WIC approved food list too, so they can't just buy whatever. So if it said cereal on there, it's still WIC approved cereal. But the big change this year now is that the state's taken that over. In the past, every grocery store would key into their system what was WIC allowed and what wasn't. Well, there was a lot of variance from an interpretation on what was WIC allowed, so they'd go to different stores and be able to purchase other things. eWIC, now the state's taken that over, so there's no overrides anymore. The biggest concern we're having, two our clients are having, is that they're calling and stopping in and saying, well, I used to be able, for 5 years I was able to buy this, and they may have, but it was never truly WIC approved. It was just that the store had keyed it into their system that way. And so what's happening now when clients come into our office, then there's a video that they watch, it's about 11 minutes, that really shows them how to use their eWIC card. They receive their card, they choose a four-digit PIN number, sign off saying they have it, and then they get an eWIC card, and then we're giving everybody a brochure again, so that really encouraging them to think of this as their first experience shopping with eWIC again, just to make sure that the foods truly are WIC approved. So is it the same as the Quest card? No. The only similarities are that they pick a PIN and the benefits are downloaded, but all the other rules still apply. They still have to just shop at WIC-approved foods, and they also have to come in for required appointments. That's another confusion, too, is we've loaded the benefits, we let them know when they need to come back next time, but then they're calling saying, well, my new benefits weren't downloaded yet or uploaded, but it was because they needed to come in for a weight check or some other WIC visit. The other difference is with eWIC, there's a first day to use and a last day to use, about a 30-day time frame. So that's also different because I believe with the Quest card it carries over from month to month.
Do you have issues with, you said you don't have to have an ID with that?
They end up, they'll have their card and then they'll put in their PIN number.
Okay, so, but you could still give it to, sell it to somebody, give them your PIN number.
Correct. You technically could, yes. We're not encouraging that, but yes. It's easier to monitor fraud with this system, and we know because other states have rolled out too, that some clients, no matter what you do to try to, that they're gonna find a way around it too. What the state is no longer doing though is they're not replacing lost or stolen benefits. In the past with these, we replace them if they come in, and then my job was to, if both came back as cash, then we'd have to check signatures, offer a fair hearing because we're going to require them to pay back. Now, because they're selecting a PIN, if they give that PIN number to somebody, they're just out of luck then. So that is no longer allowed. And then there's several ways for them to keep track of their benefits too. When they come in, we print them out a shopping list, and then each time they go to the store, the receipt, the top of the receipt shows what they use, the bottom shows what's remaining. There's a site, online site that they can go on to and track it. There's a 1-800 number. They can call or come into our office, or they can go to the store and get a printout. And so these are just the different things going to the store that we encourage them that first visit to bring along. So that page, the second thing there is what their shopping list looks like. The eWIC, this really just goes through in great detail how to use it at the store, and then the WIC-approved foods. And so, like I said, the top part is what they use, the bottom part then shows what's remaining. And then the next area I wanted to just give you an update on is our Father Involvement Project. Several years ago, we received a grant through the Wisconsin Partnership Program on father involvement. We had noticed a lot of our WIC dads were coming in along to their appointments. We wanted to see what we could do to keep them engaged in their children's lives, all related to that healthier birth outcome as part of the life grant with the infant mortality. So based on needs assessments and a survey we did with our dads focus groups, looked at different model programs, we came up with a two-pronged approach for engaging the fathers. The first was increasing father involvement at WIC appointments and activities. So some of the things we're doing now is encouraging all the dads to help us take the weight and height of the kids. They hold the child while we check their iron or their lead, engaging them in the conversation too on setting a goal for their next visit. And then some father-specific education and support. And when we looked at all the different models, we chose the Nurturing Fathers curriculum. And so this was just, it was about a six-page document on different ways we could increase WIC involvement and then the father education and support. And so what we decided to do is, it's called Dedicated Dads with the Nurturing Fathers. We got a small grant through United Way to start the father-specific programming, and then we received another grant through the Minority Health Grant to expand that. And then I also looked at ways to integrate it into WIC so we could make it a full-time position. So in July, we hired Charmaine Harris, who is one of our WIC dads, who's, if you haven't met him yet, he's very, very passionate about the work on keeping dads involved. And so part of his job now is hooking clients up to different services in the community, and part of it is the father-specific programming. So he's leading two different classes now, they're 13-week courses, and we're just envious of how many he can get into a group. The evening group is about 14 that are regularly participating. The morning one is about 8, and they'll go through that course. As part of the grant, then, by next July, we want to have 100 WIC dads complete that coursework. And then our last is the community food security. So we're working with community partners for a comprehensive coalition to address hunger and food security in Kenosha. Our most recent event was in February when we hosted a community breakfast and had different community leaders do the SNAP challenge and talk a little bit about that. We just kind of resurrected the group again and looking at next steps. We were just notified too through the National WIC Association that we'll be receiving a grant starting in April to really improve this and increase the food security efforts in Kenosha. So, questions? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Foster, we just went past. I mean,
go for it. No, that's good. I'm sorry I'm late.
Till
you
later.
Got it.
I thought maybe you wanted to do that later. Okay. So, Debbie, any questions for Pam? No? Okay. So, Debbie is trying to present.
So I'm with the Prevent Suicide Kenosha County. We've changed our name about 3 different times, but we're still the same people. It's just a branding thing to do throughout the state of Wisconsin because there are other groups that chose ours in different counties. So that's where the logo came from. And again, most counties, if they are a suicide prevention coalition, we have on Prevent Suicide, whatever their county is or whatever area they are covering. So one of our main things that we do is QPR training, and I think I've mentioned this last year when I came and presented as well. And we are encouraging more people to be trained in QPR as far as trainers. And so we just recently held a training, and we have 14 trainers now in Kenosha County. We helped Racine get 4, I think it was actually 2 people went through that training, and the 3 from that training, and there was already 1 that was trained in Racine County, and then we put 2 people in Walworth County through. Both counties have come to us and asked for some support as far as how do they get things going, because they do not have a coalition in either of their counties. So to be able to offer them this QPR training was a first step. We've trained 3,200 people since 2012. That was the beginning of this particular grant. And There's been lots of different trainings that we've conducted this year, 27 this year, training over 880 people. So the main focus we've had this past year has been with middle school students and high school students. And before we couldn't get into the schools, and now they want us there quite often, at least on a yearly basis, which has been very welcomed, because obviously that's why this whole group started many years ago, is because of the teen suicides that we were having. This year we lost two teens at the beginning of the year at Central High School, and we were able to go out and do QPR training. So for those of you who don't know what QPR stands for, because I keep referring to that, and you're probably like, what does that mean? It's question, persuade, refer, and it's about a 1 hour multimedia presentation that teaches people to look for the warning signs of suicide, because a lot of times if people don't know what they are, they're not knowing what they're looking for. And then persuading people to get help, because most people that are depressed, suicidal, don't believe they can get help. They think that this is it. This is the only way for them if they die by suicide. And then referring them. There has become a great group of people that we're working with here in Kenosha County that has a wonderful network that people can get referred to for our mental health agencies and get the help that they need. We also are known for our means restriction initiative in Kenosha County. We have six medicine collection sites in the county, three out in the county, three in the city, and we've collected over 10,000 pounds of medication since 2012. That's a lot of meds not being used. So again, we're also looking at prescribing practices, and that'll come up a little bit as far as, you know, maybe doctors are prescribing things that they could maybe look at using Tylenol for instead. Again, I'm not a doctor and I don't pretend to know a lot about medications, but we do have an ER physician that also works for the Poison Control Center, and she has done some really great work up in Milwaukee as far as opiate prescribing practices and creating a pathway. So hopefully she'll be able to share that information as this grant continues. And our medicine lock boxes, those are boxes that you can get free of charge from the health department for clients, for family members, to lock up their meds. So maybe there's somebody that's abusing drugs in their home, maybe there's small children in the home, just a way to keep them safer. So we have a small box as well as a medium box that we give out. The small box holds about 12 bottles of meds. The medium size one holds about 20 to 22 bottles of meds. Is a combination lock, is it foolproof? No, but it again is a deterrent. So if people lock up their meds, chances are of somebody just easily getting a hold of them is very little. And then our cable gun lock program continues. The Kubli Foundation has been gracious to offer us our third grant with them, and we were able to purchase 5,800 cable gun locks. I believe we're down to probably about 4,800, and that's without even advertising, and there's a bunch of people waiting. The new thing that we had this year was we added a sticker to them, and that was per the request of the Kubli Foundation to give people that last thought before maybe they decide to take their life, that there is help out there, and it gives the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline as well as the text line that's available for the state. And those stickers still have to go on there, and it's a process. So those are going out very soon. One of our objectives is to expand the Suicide Prevention Coalition as well as the Self-Harm Death Analysis Review Team, which is also known as the SDART. And there's been some literature review that the nurses on our grant are looking at. Gianna Ventura is one of the nurses. She is up at a conference, otherwise would have been at the meeting today. And then Amanda Tura also helps out with different aspects because of our drug prevention grant is tied so closely to this. We've reviewed 2 years of data so far, and we are trying to look and see if there are any things that we can help physicians, mental health agencies, any agencies we look at to maybe target people that may be at risk for suicide. I know that we've talked with lawyers and said, you know, when somebody's going through a divorce, there might be some extra resources that you can give them, because we've known that people that are getting divorced, lose their job, losing their home, those are risk factors that we've seen be part of the death reviews. And we're just trying to figure out a way to kind of get that information, because we don't want to, we have health fair or job fairs out here, but we don't want to put the mental health table out there and go, no, if you don't get that job today, you might want to take some. So, but we are thinking about maybe putting like a goodie bag together that people don't know what's in the bag until they get home and, oh, I really could use this information. So trying to come up with creative ways to do that, have not quite done that just yet. As far as identifying people that are at risk for suicide and self-harm, the prescription drug monitoring program, for the physicians in the room, are you all using that?
Yes.
And how's it been going? Okay. Was it difficult at first and really frustrating, but now it's getting to be better, or?
Well, my staff has done it, basically. Mm-hmm. I don't plug into it myself, and I know that most of primary care for Aurora does it. Mm-hmm. And probably ortho and some of those. Okay.
I know there's ones that was friendly.
Okay. There's some initiatives coming down that they're thinking about making it mandatory, but for certain things, like if you're going to prescribe opiates. So just kind of wanted to see, you know, what your thoughts are, because I know when it first rolled out, some people were very confused or not getting your number or your PIN number and all that. But it seems to be working pretty well. They are also reevaluating it constantly to see if there's improvements that can be done. And there's another grant that we have that the doctor that's on our grant is also working on that grant to make improvements. And so if there's ever any feedback that you have, by all means, let me know, and I can definitely forward it on to people. It's a little hard to get the information out of there, like the public, like if you want, you know, like how is it working, or how many of your physicians are part of this. It's hard to get the data, but it's not impossible. It just takes a little bit of time.
And what do you know as far as what's the delay of things being entered? I know I used it like a week ago, and the drug had been filled probably a week prior to that, and it still wasn't in the system. I mean, do you know what the delay is, or?
I thought it was supposed to be only like a week is what they had.
Is that about right? Okay.
But I'm not sure if they're trying to improve that, because obviously that would be very helpful. I know that pharmacies are on top of it as best they can. They're the ones that obviously are, I think, getting the brunt of it as far as having to do the entering and that type of thing. But I will ask that question, and I'll definitely get back to you and see if there's any movement as far as let's move it to 48 hours or it's got to be done within 24 hours. I don't know if that's a possibility. And again, with it just being, you know, 2 years into it, there still could be some growing pains, I'm guessing. But being the 49th state to get a prescription drug monitoring program, we waited all that time, and I think to learn from everybody else. That's what I'm looking at it as. There's still one state, I think with Missouri, that still wasn't part of it yet. But everybody's is different. And so if it would have been universal, I think it would have been a little bit better, but I don't think everybody can agree on how they want it to be run either.
It also isn't clear to me that the VA hospitals use it, because there's been multiple times we'll see somebody who also goes to VA, and I never find those scripts. So I don't, even in the Illinois database, I can't find them. If they go down to
Cleveland. I will ask our VA contact if she has any questions. Thank you for mentioning that. As far as disseminating information, sharing what we've learned or what we've been doing, we host 3 clergy summits, and we will be developing the next clergy summit soon. And we also developed a toolkit so that other counties throughout the state can also provide this without having to start from square one. It's posted on the Prevent Suicide Wisconsin website. We have made sure that the medicine collection brochure is in both English and Spanish. We just recently had an update because Silver Lake Police Department is no longer Silver Lake Police Department. It's covered by Kenosha Sheriff's Department. So that's the only update we've had, but everybody else continues to want to be a part of that collection program. We've provided some heroin summits here in the community. Dr. Galvis Reg from Wheaton has come down and spoke in different forums, whether it's to the community. We just targeted 2 colleges and had pretty decent turnout for those. Like I mentioned, QPR we've been doing. We've also presented about the clergy summits at the Prevent Suicide Wisconsin Conference And we've also presented at Keeping Kids Alive in regards to our ESTART program. And then tomorrow, I'm actually going up to the second half of that conference and going to be talking about the state strategies and how Kenosha has incorporated what we're doing into the state strategy so that people can get an idea of how they can do that as well. As far as our resources, we continue to offer our resources. The community resource card, I have examples of that. It's this version is going to be new and improved because it's a little small print, so I wanted to show you guys what the new version looked like. But if you guys are looking for them to have in your agency, let me know, and I definitely will get them out to you once we get those reprinted. We have the mental health guide. That has been, it's been about a year or so since that's been printed. It's in English and Spanish as well. Kind of a 101 guide if people are new to mental health. Our counseling services sheet every 6 months, that become, or that is updated. And all of these are posted on our website, so if anybody needs those resources. But the counseling services sheet has been really well received in our community. It's helping people just narrow down how many places that they have to call. I know Racine County commented that their people get frustrated using it because they said that it's not always true to what it said. Well, we put a disclaimer on here that yes, it can change. And if you call and you are looking for a psychiatrist, well, recently there's a couple psychiatrists that just retired. So it's important to know that it's constantly changing. But if I refer people to a couple different agencies, I say, if you don't find what you're looking for, then give me a call back and we can help, or call the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Resource Center. They help people navigate through that system. And so it's important that they're giving us that feedback so we know to be able to change different things on this resource. And then as far as the Survivors of Suicide Support Group, I just wanted to highlight that. It's something that I'm involved with, and a pastor helps me co-facilitate that. We have had three different groups, and it has been very well received in our community. At first we thought, is anybody going to come? They come. It's amazing the people that are affected by suicide and their strength and courage to continue. It's they learn a lot from each other, and I'm just very grateful that I have the support to be able to offer that support in the community. I've met some really great people that have helped me in my delivering of suicide prevention materials, and so if anybody wants to know more about that, by all means let me know. We will be offering our next session starting after the first of the year, but we have two more sessions left, and we average probably about 12 people that come to this particular session. And this is a picture of our coalition, some of them, not everybody. When we were able to, I actually even told them ahead of time I was bringing a camera, and they willingly stood there for a picture, which is nice. So lots of different agencies represented. We're always looking for representation. We do have some survivors that are starting to represent on the coalition as well, but it's a great group of people, and you know, very passionate about this issue. We did try to expand a little bit into Racine, offering our services there. It sounds like Racine is going to do their own thing, and we're supporting them in any way and any way that we can. If anybody wants these resources, what I'll do is I'll maybe just pass them around, and you're welcome to take them. The one other thing I just wanted to highlight was that I mentioned a text line. This has been very beneficial in our community. I have probably given out over, I would say, 3,000 of these cards. The person that runs this hope line laughs, and she's like, do you need more cards? She just keeps shipping them down here because we keep giving them out during our QPR trainings, different health fairs that we have. But this is for anybody. You don't have to be suicidal to use this. It could be, I'm having a really cruddy day, my friends aren't available, I want to text somebody and talk to them about my issues. So what people do is they text HOPELINE to 741-741, and a live person will text you back and say, how can I help you? And so, you know, maybe you had a breakup and you just want to talk about it. They can do that. If it's a kid that's flunking a test and maybe the parents don't understand, they can talk to them that way. The response time is very short as far as getting to this person. when we're talking like New York and Chicago and things like that, they're having, you know, 10 minutes, you know, half an hour, those type of things. I would say ours is within 3 minutes, and it's probably even shorter than that. It's been going for just a year now, and it is a statewide text line. So again, if people want to take these, even if you want to program it in your phone and pass the card on, that's what I always encourage kids to do, and make it normal for them to take it. Every time I do a presentation, I say, everybody take one. And maybe it's not for you, maybe it's for your friend, your family member, or, like I said, program it in your phone and pass it on to somebody else. Sometimes I'll find stuff on the floor. I don't usually find things on the floor. People do take them because you never know when you're going to need them. So thank you very much for inviting me to come. And if anybody has any questions, our current numbers, we're at, as of yesterday, we had another suicide yesterday. So we are at 25 for this year. That's the same as we were at last year. This year really started off kind of busy. We had a lot in January, and the beginning of the year just really kind of threw us for a loop. But we're still looking at middle-aged men being the most common person that takes their life. So.
To determine it's a suicide and not like an accidental drug overdose, what's the determination of somebody that say they're suicidal?
There's a lot of different determining factors, and the medical examiner works with law enforcement and the family and anybody that they can interview to find out whether people, was the person making threats, or have they been in a depressed mood, what was going on with them. A lot of times they'll wait for autopsy and they'll look at the contents of the stomach. It doesn't mean, okay, well, there's 12 pills in there, so therefore it's an accidental compared to if there was 13. It all is all the different circumstances, so it really just depends on what's going on. If a person leaves a note, is it always determined? Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on, you know, what the note says, because sometimes people just said, I don't want to live anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of things that come into play, so it's not like here, let's follow this list, and since we can check all these off, therefore. And a lot of times they can't determine, so they'll label it as undetermined. So we could possibly have even more deaths that aren't counted as suicide because of the undetermined.
That 10,000 pounds of pills is staggering, considering a full pill bottle's ounce or two.
There's a lot. And some people will take them out of the pills and or out of the pills out of the bottles, mm-hmm. and put them in, but most don't condense. They just leave them however people turn them in. And then we're talking liquids too, so there's lots of different things that could weigh into that. But yeah, that's a lot of that.
Around here is police department.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Any law enforcement is where you can grab it.
I've used it twice in a year. Relative to passed away, 17 bottles in one count. Another one was about 8.
And when we used to do the take back days, there were, I think people were having a contest. Guess how many I brought in today?
Yeah.
I don't know. How many did you bring in? And sometimes they'd open their back door and there'd be boxes full of them. And we've had incidents where people would call me and said, I had a relative pass away. Can I bring in the meds? Yeah, sure. Well, we have garbage bags full, like 3. I'm like, okay, that's a lot, but we can definitely do that. We work with law enforcement and say, this is the time they're going to come in. Can you meet them so that obviously it doesn't fill up the box? So, mm-hmm. So if you have clients that have those issues, or by all means, because some people are, waiting for the end of the world and they're going to have all their pills. I think they don't want to get rid of them and do dangerous.
Do you have a relationship with hospice and the medical examiner where you can talk to them about how to dispose of meds, particularly those end-of-life medications?
They have protocol that they're supposed to follow statewide, but I know certain ones do it certain ways, because we've had, I remember one drop-off day that we had a person come and she's like, oh yeah, I brought these from this client's home that didn't want them anymore. And I'm like, that's kind of dangerous, because if you would have got stopped, the police could have said you're stealing those meds from that person, or the family can accuse you. You're doing well, or a good job of wanting to put them where they're supposed to be, but there's repercussions. As far as hospice goes, I don't know if they have protocol where if there were 2 people from hospice that transported them back to their agency and disposed of it, would make sense, because then it's a check and balance system. But a lot of times, my understanding is that they were putting them in kitty litter, coffee grounds, or like if it's liquid, that they would dump it down the sink and document that. It's not good to leave it for the family members to dispose of, because who knows if the family member is going to dispose of it. And that's a way of extra income. It's a way of maybe if that person's a drug addict, then. So
it's a way of suicide because of death of that, that family member, mm-hmm. too. So
yep,
I think that might be a good conversation to have, mm-hmm. with your coalition and the hospice, mm-hmm. to make sure that the
mental health. We have one hospice person on our coalition, but I know that there's more than one, obviously, in the area. So.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize for running late. I don't have any chairman's comments. Cindy?
I just have a few. First of all, I want to thank my executive team, Gwen and Mark, for covering for me while I was off, and also our professional staff, that everything was just smooth sailing. So I sure appreciate that. And I want to thank the board for the recommendation of approval of our budget. So thank you very much last month. And the county board will be voting on that this week. I also think we have some students. I don't know if they want to introduce themselves.
Okay. my name is Julie, and we're all students from Herzing.
My name is Nikki.
My name is Heather.
Okay, thank you very much. It's an observational experience for them to see how law functions. I want to mention that our environmental team, if you recollect, we had that salmonella outbreak locally. Well, the CDC is very interested in the response of our environmental team and the processes and protocols that were put in place. They were quite impressed with our procedures. Our lab successfully passed the ASCLAD, that's the forensic laboratory audit, so we're very proud of them. Our nursing team were busy just a couple of weeks ago with two bacterial meningitis cases, both adults, one was in Assyria. And the other, the samples were sent to the CDC to determine the organism. But all of the contacts were prophylaxed in our community, and any surrounding communities, we've been in contact with those county health departments. Debbie didn't mention about our adult, or I didn't hear it, our adult death review team, that we had representatives go to the American Public Health Association and do a presentation. So they were submitted a proposal, it was accepted, and they were invited to present at APHA, so we're very proud of them, and it was a well-received program by the attendees. Right now, we have a CDC grant awarded to our state, and we're partnering with our state in regards to opioids, so we'll be continuing on that project, and it's just in the beginning stages of starting, leaping off. We are going to be having a conversation with a couple of our human services partners regarding dementia-friendly communities, Brookside, and our adult, disability and aging program. We're going to sit down with health and take a look at if there's some dollars that can be brought to our community in order to expand our dementia-friendly community. And staffing, we have the MCH team leader position that's open and has been posted, and we potentially have an individual to fill that. And we have a nurse on maternity leave. And do we have anything else, Gwen? Awesome. Were you like it that way? Mark, anything on your end?
Asthma navigator, okay. Or case manager it is.
Because
of the head coordinator leaving, so we got a half-time position there, and we have a half-time position for HUD.
Okay.
So to help out with the risk assessments.
Okay, very good. And that's it. Thank you.
Yes, we have one other, and that's that the child death review team, which the Kenosha Health Department is an integral part of, we are receiving an award in the state tomorrow.
Thank
so
you.
Another Living Kids Alive conference that Debbie will be presenting.
I meant to write that down. Thank you for addressing that, because that's really huge. You know, we were one of the beginning child death review teams in the state, and now that they're receiving an award for all the hard work that's been done since what, mid-90s, early 90s?
Well, it's been around for a long time, but I think that I think what really put us on the map is that the health department really took an invested an amazing effort into data collection, which we have been stellar in comparison to any other team in the state. And there's, I think, you know, probably 40 or 50 child death review teams in the state, and, you know, they've been growing, but we were kind of on the forefront. And when it came to data collection, the health department really took the lead in getting all of that data and back entry data that we could really provide more statistics and do more prevention within the state to reduce child deaths.
Well, thanks for mentioning that. And we do have a passion for data. I mean, if it's not documented, you have no proof for what's going on. And it's really Gwen's team who diligently took the time to do all of that keying. Thank you.
Okay, good. Corporation Council.
Nothing to report.
Okay. Any other business? We'll take a motion to adjourn.
So,
all right, thank you. How are you? Always got to be.
So we're going to hand
him forgets to. Okay. He didn't hang up. He sent it forever.
And everything else?
I checked this morning. And it was like, never hung up off the phone.
Because you know, I'm the rock.